Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
And welcome into the latest edition of ESPN FC. I'm Kate Murray, joined in the studio by Craig Burley and Stevie Nicol, and we'll be starting tonight with the Manchester City rumours of players who could be leaving, namely Raheem Sterling, Gabriel Jesus and Bernardo Silva. These names consistently coming up this summer with a move away from the club, as we now welcome in Nadim Anua to talk a little bit more about this. And Nadim, it's been a little while since we've seen you, so there's a few things we want to bring up with you. But I want to start with Raheem Sterling. Word is right now that he'd be interested in a move to Chelsea after the new owner has made him a top transfer target for the club. How do you feel about him leaving Man City potentially?
I think it'll be a shame, but I understand it. I think in years gone by, you know, he's been such an important player for the club, whereas you'd argue the last two seasons, sometimes when you see him out there, you know, some people say, well, shouldn't someone else be playing instead of him? And I think that must be a tough position for him to be in. And I think when you look at the contract that he's got, how he's got 1 year left, I think for City, if there's a player that wants to go and play more football elsewhere, then I guess they have to weigh up that sort of decision. And it's, like I say, it's a shame because he scored over 100 goals for City. And when Pep Guardiola was there, when he first came in, a lot of people thought, well, there's no way Sterling's going to fit into his plans, but he's been a huge part of the success that they've had over recent years. So I get it. Like, there's talk, I think some people from the blue side anyway, and sort of football fans in general, they sort of take offence when they hear somebody say they want to leave their club. But the fact is, for those people, they just want to play more football. And for the stats we'll see with Raheem, I think it's 47 games last season. But I don't think all of those were starts. And at times, especially for City, for Liverpool, for Chelsea, as the big games come, if you're somebody that's sitting on the bench, you can't help but feel like maybe you're undervalued. So it would be a shame to see him leave, but given the fact that Alvarez is coming in, Haaland is coming as well, maybe he understands that sort of the opportunities which he would really want and feel he deserves on a week-to-week basis aren't going to be there. And if Chelsea are offering that to him, then I guess you have to consider it.
Where do you stand on?
Well, I'm intrigued by the way you set this up and the way I read the email from our producer. And yeah, I did actually read this one today. It was a long day at home. I know. It's time's on my side.
This is not the only
thing. But you know,
I
was intrigued to see that the new owner, Todd Boehly, wants to make Raheem Sterling his top transfer target. Thomas Tuchel? No? I mean, I would imagine Todd Boehly knows pretty much diddly squat about players, about this sport at the elite level. So what's the Todd Boehly wants to make? I mean, the decisions, financial decisions, checks to be written, balancing books, that's ownership. But I'm not quite sure about the wording of this. I mean, is this Thomas Tuchel? Does he want the player? Did Thomas Tuchel want Romelu Lukaku? That would be more intriguing to me. As I said on yesterday's show, at the moment, Raheem Sterling would overload Chelsea with a lot of these players. Hudson-Odoi, Hakim Ziyech, Mason Mount, Timo Werner plays in a wider position. Christian Pulisic, who was a constant gripe this side of the pond anyway, about game time for him. So, I don't know. I mean, he's a good player. Of course he's a good player. I think maybe he wants to be the big fish in a slightly smaller pond at the moment. And I mean that not as Chelsea, a smaller club. I mean the fact that City and Liverpool are ahead of them and it's harder to get in their teams. Maybe that's what he wants. But I'm slightly concerned that the wording is the owner wants to make him. The owner should just be signing the cheques and letting the football decision. Or go and look at Man United and follow their way of doing it and see what a mess there is. Let the football people, if you trust them, make the decisions. And I would like to think that's what Chelsea are doing. And it's not the owner going, oh, there's a player from City. Oh, he's good. Yeah, I've seen him on TV. Yeah, let's get him. Because that's a dangerous road to go down.
Would he be a big fish at Chelsea, Raheem Sterling?
I think if he goes there, he starts over all the names that Craig put out there. You know, Pulisic and Zajic, pretty much all of those.
Havertz, I forgot him.
All of them. All, apart from Havertz, every other one, I don't think Tuchel trusts him. Everybody says he likes Werner. Well, I tell you what, you look at how many times he starts, it doesn't seem to me that he's really enamoured with him. But he doesn't have any choice. The only person other than Havertz is Mason Mount. And Sterling, if he goes to Chelsea right now, whether it's Tuchel or Todd Bowley or whoever, absolutely, in my opinion, would play more games. And this can only be about having more time on the field. Because you don't go from City to Chelsea, a team who are way, way off you, or way off the pace, challenging for the Premier League or the Champions League, unless that's what it's all about. And I think that's what it is about. And I think it's a good move for Chelsea. Again, regardless of whose decision. Because for me, Sterling starts above every other one of them.
Would you agree with that, Nadim?
I suppose in some ways I would have to, yeah. I think Sterling, as he arrives in there, he arrives as a winner, as a champion, you know, barring the Champions League as such, I believe. Like, he's very comfortable in the Premier League. He knows how to win that. He knows how to win the Cups. He knows the standard in terms of having to win every single game. But ultimately, like, I understand what Craig's saying about, is it an ownership thing? Is it a club thing? But then I think for Raheem to talk about his side, I think the stat came up, then he started 32 games. And, you know, that feels like a lot. But when your team's playing 60 games in a season, all of a sudden you realise, like, are you really that important if you only start half the games? So I think if he does go there, based on, say, the money they'd be bringing in, the fact that they're bringing in with experience and pedigree to try and get them to be winning and contending more in the league and alike, I think he would start. I think some of the players that are there, when you're looking at Werners, you're looking at Ziyech's and so on, like, at times they can be very good, but maybe there's a level of consistency which is missing within that. And I think when you look at the stats there for Sterling, you know, people argue he's had two bad seasons over the last two seasons, but he's ended up scoring over 30 goals combined if you include both seasons. So I get it. I think if he went there, he would start. I'd be very surprised if he went there and he was just sitting on the bench, because this is essentially a marquee signing for Chelsea Football Club. So what would be the use in bringing him down there if you didn't think he was going to be essentially a starter for your club?
And what's also the point of bringing him down there when you're sitting with probably six players, even though he's probably the best of them, when you have a manager who's under pressure, you have a new ownership, and excuse me if I've missed something here, but there's a 36 or 7-year-old at the back, going to be pretty much on his own. They've sold Tomori to Milan. He's gone, had a great season. They've lost Christensen. They've lost Rudiger, who was the best player at... I mean, is Todd Bowley missing something here? I think Chelsea fans would be looking at it going, oh yeah, he could do a job for us. And by the way, it'll not be as easy to get 17 goals and 8 assists in the Chelsea team as it will be, as it was in the Man City team, for obvious reasons. But I think from a management perspective, holy smokes. I mean, you've got a budget to bring a player in that means you have to move players because there's so many of them, and you've got a back line that's been decimated. Decimated. On top of that, you've got two keepers, one who's brilliant, the other one who's been a great stand-in, but he was £75 million. And on top of that, you've got the £100 million Lukaku getting shoveled back for a loan fee. I mean, this is not about appeasing fans for new ownership. It's about making the right decisions. And the bulk of the budget, in my opinion, has to go towards midfield and particularly defence. And then, yes, they need a striker. I give you that. Yes, they need an out striker. They do. They're not going to win it with Sterling coming in and saying, oh, yeah, you know, we can Sterling, Havertz, Werner, we can rotate. No, it's not going to happen. These players are not as good as the Liverpool boys or the City boys. So they do need a striker that's going to bring them goals. City and Liverpool have bought that striker, but they need centre-halves. Stevie, how can you go with...
They need a lot. There's no question they need a lot. I would argue that they could do with freshening up in the middle of the park as well. So, back, middle and front, they need strengthening. But if you can get Sterling, then it's not a bad move. Now, the question becomes, do you get a Sterling and trade off the fact that you're not getting a centre-back? That's kind of where you should be. It's not that it's a bad move to get Sterling. It's a bad move if you use up a chunk of your money when there are more important areas in the field. That would be my concern. If you can do both, then Sterling's a great one. But if it becomes one or the other, then clearly they're invisible at the back right now. It's tough to say who's actually there.
But then from the Manchester City perspective, Nadim, what are your thoughts on the fact that they'd be selling to a Premier League rival?
It would be a shame because we've seen how effective he has been across all those years, whether it was at Liverpool, whether it was at City and the like. But this is just the nature of football. I don't think you should have a divine right to stop a player from going somewhere like that. Because if you ultimately say, that he can leave, it's basically saying you don't worry about sort of the effect that he can have upon you. So he could go to Chelsea and he can make them better. But for City, they believe that they'll be better off without him if that ends up being the case. And then I guess you're just rolling the dice as such. But, I'm sure the guys maybe agree with this. But as a player, you should be free to be able to go somewhere. If a club wants to let you go, in my opinion, they should not be able to limit where you can go. Because if they're letting you go, they believe that you're not good enough to be able to stay on your side. So, if he goes there, I hope he does really, really well. And he can prove a point to all these doubters and things like that. But if City are letting him go, they have a lot of faith in Alvarez. They have a lot of faith in Haaland. A lot of faith in Grealish, Mahrez, to name but a few. So, this is just the way that football goes sometimes. And for Sterling, if he wants more football, it's going to be down to him to decide, essentially. If someone says they want him, he's going to say yes or no. And for City, they can't just keep him there forever, because at the end of the day, if they keep him for one more year, he's going to walk away on free anyway.
What a great bit of business that would be. You get arguably the most sought-after player in Haaland for, 75 mil? And you can get rid of Sterling for 50. So it's cost you 25 mil for the hottest property in town. And you're still left with Mahrez and Grealish and all these other players. I mean, it's absolute common sense is what it is. You move on.
And on top of that, far from me to rile up some Chelsea fans again, but the truth hurts. They're not a major, major rival at the moment.
I was waiting for it.
Well, what do you mean you were waiting for?
I even chose my words to not say a Premier League title rival because I knew you'd come in on this one. They're not a title rival next season.
No, they weren't a title. They should have been, to some extent, a title rival last season. They shot themselves in the foot within their own squad. They're weaker. Their ownership's obviously been a shambles for obvious reasons. They've had a change in that. So there's a lot of uncertainty. They've lost a lot of players. Their main striker has been a disaster and he's off skate to Italy, and we'll probably talk about that again. So they're weaker than last year where they were, and I don't know exactly the points, but it was around 20. So it's not like City are selling to Liverpool. It's not like in the old days when Wenger and Ferguson were going headbutting each other every week that neither of them would want to sell to either of them because they were so close. They're not a major rival at the moment. And I know, I get it. Chelsea fans will be, spitting at the TV and blah, blah, blah. The truth hurts. They were shown to be what they are last season. Yeah, there was the odd cup run. And please spare me the Club World Cup. Right, spare me. That cup blows away in the wind. The major stuff, they were shown to be short. So, City for Guardiola, he backs himself, as Nedim said, but they're selling to a team at the moment that's got quite a bit of work to do to be a rival over 38 games.
Chelsea are just back in the pack now, aren't they? They looked as though at one stage, maybe 18 months ago, where they could maybe start rivaling City and Liverpool. But now, when you look at them, they're back in the pack. You couldn't choose between them and Spurs in particular, who's going to be better next season. And we don't think Spurs are anywhere close to the top two. So actually, Chelsea are going the wrong way. Chelsea are looking as though, the question now is, will Chelsea get in the top four? Not will Chelsea win the Premier League or the Champions League. That's where they are right now.
Let's talk about another one of the players that is expected to depart Manchester City. Gabriel Jesus also looking for more playing time. Arsenal said to be the destination for him. When you see how important he had been, Nadim, especially against the top six last season, the stats show for themselves. Do you think there could be a time when Pep Guardiola could end up regretting this?
I think with Haaland in Manchester, I'm going to say no. I think he's going to bet on him. And it's a shame for Jesus, because he feels like for his duration of his time at City, for as well as he's done, he's always felt like a bit of an understudy. And it's a shame, because when he's doing well, he does very, very well. But then it's sometimes when the big games come, it's no surprise to see him on the bench, and that must be so frustrating for him, because as is the case with, you know, all these big squads with good players in, everyone who sits on the bench, they're more than capable in terms of being able to play in those games and play in those big matches as well. So I think maybe Pep could regret it, but I don't think he's the type of person to, you know, make a decision about somebody leaving and say it's a shame, because at the end of the day, like, they could just say no, you have to stay whilst you're under contract and not really worry about the consequence. So yeah, I think he's done well. I think he's probably not played as many games as he would have liked. He's had some impact, but not like an infinite amount. And I think the best thing, to be fair, for him last season was being involved in some of those bigger games when he was literally playing through the middle, which is how most people thought he would be a couple of years ago. So I don't think there'll be regrets. I think the squad that they have is great, you know, and it's been added to again this summer. And I think for Jesus, if he believes that more game time is available elsewhere, like, going to play for Arsenal at the Emirates is not the worst thing in the world. And I think if he can go there and show some of those positives that he's shown for City, you know, it's a great move for him. And it might be a great move for City as well, because, again, you know, frees up some of that transfer money, and some of these other dealings can seem like even better business now.
I think we're talking about two players that have been really good for City in different ways, but are in somewhat okay to be collateral that they can let go without damaging the ship too much, if at all. I think if you're talking about, you know, Kevin De Bruyne leaving, and with Fernandinho leaving, they were going to lose Rodri. You know, we're talking huge holes here, because we know how important those kind of players are. I mean, you've seen the job Fabinho's done at Liverpool, Rodri at Man City, and Fernandinho over a decade. So we're talking about players where they've got others that can. Yeah, they're good, and they've contributed big time, no doubt about it. But it's possessions where they can mix and match, and they have others to come in. If it had been a couple of other real key players, then Guardiola would have been in his house sweating away till the start of the season. But I don't think he will be if he loses these two players.
No. And I don't know what the feeling is at the club, but from the outside, it looks like Jesus has never quite looked to be part of, certainly the starting 11. It always seemed to me as though he was trying to prove that he was the right player to play through the middle for City. Now, I know it's hard to follow Aguero, but I don't think he's ever quite fulfilled the potential we thought he had. And I think generally, in his time there, that has shone through. Yes, he had a great spell at the end of last year, but before that, when were we ever talking about him this guy should be playing number nine or through the middle?
But does it have to be through the middle with Gabriel Jesus? Is it not worth keeping him?
Well, he's not
he's not better, and he's not even on par with your Grealish and your Mahrez in particular. So he's not the best number nine, and he's not the best wide guy on the left or the right. So he is kind of where he's been since he signed. He's been on the outside looking in. And so, listen, if it's worse for them, in my opinion, losing Sterling than it is Jesus.
Okay, would you agree with that? Worse for them losing Sterling than losing Jesus, Nadim?
I think so. I think you see with Sterling's goal record, like, I think it was two seasons ago, he's got 30 goals in 50 games. You know, that's spectacular. The sort of foil he was, the way he was playing with Sergio Aguero, like, people have really strong memories of Sterling. I think anyone as well back in the UK who play fantasy football love Raheem Sterling at Manchester City, let's just say that. Whereas it's not necessarily the same with Gabriel Jesus. So I think in some ways that is a bigger loss. Sterling's a couple of years older, feels more sort of experienced in terms of playing in those big games. So I agree with what the guys are saying. Like, they've turned, unfortunately, especially for Sterling, they've turned into peripheral figures. And when they're not playing, it's not like the biggest controversy that weekend, because the person that's coming in is very capable in that position as well. And I think for Sterling, you know, maybe he's a notch higher because of what he's done. But for Jesus, for me, through season on season, he's never really done enough to be a guaranteed starter for longer than maybe a month and a half, 2 months. Whereas I think with Sterling, it was a spell where he was probably one of the first names on the team sheet. So Yes, I think Sterling is going to be a bigger miss, but you know, that's the whole thing with new signings, and they're bringing in a 21-year-old who apparently might be the best thing in world football. So let's see how he reacts to that.
Yeah, people don't realise sometimes it's simple mathematics. I mean, the dressing room's only so big, and the owners of City have got a lot of money, but you can't just keep bringing people in without somebody going out the door.
Does it not count for nothing? If it was 29 starts last season, all those games against the Big Six, 5 goal involvements in those games, doesn't that count when you're standing off and being counted in these big games?
Somebody has to go. Phil Foden's not going. Jack Grealish is not going because they've just signed him. Don't think he's been... he has to get to Sterling standard in terms of those numbers. Riyad Mahrez is not going ahead of him, I wouldn't imagine. So somebody has to go, and he has a contract that is a free transfer in a year's time. He has a team in Chelsea that's not exactly breathing down their neck. They have their own problems. And they brought in Alvarez from South America and, Erling Haaland. So, you know, managers have to make decisions.
And the manager and the coaching staff know what Jesus is all about. You know, it's understandable to say, well, look at what he did at the end of the season against all the big teams and all the big games. But when you've been with a player for a period of time, you know what he's all about. And he can have a great spell, like he did. I've coached players myself who've... I had a centre-forward who wasn't a particularly great footballer, was gangly, was awkward. He scored 15 goals one season. But that following season, I couldn't get rid of him quick enough because I knew what he's about. Sometimes you just have good spells, regardless of how good or how bad you are. And the coaching staff and the manager know exactly what Jesus is capable of. And as Nathan said himself, other than a spell where he's been great for a month, that's no use when you're playing a Premier League season over 9 months or anywhere else.
Well, one of the other players in that list that we showed you, we've been talking about it here on FC, is Bernardo Silva. Has been linked with Barcelona. It could be a deal that's dependent on whether Frankie de Jong leaves Barcelona. This is Pep Guardiola talking about Bernardo Silva's future. He says, as of today, I think Bernardo will continue at Man City next season. But as I always said, I don't like to keep players that are unhappy. What are your thoughts on this, Nadim? What Pep said and the potential move for Bernardo Silva away from City?
I think there were rumours of him leaving. I think it was the end of last season a year ago. And, you know, they're still circulating. And maybe he's unhappy with certain things that are going on at the club. It doesn't seem like he's unhappy with his teammates, but maybe he doesn't get on with the manager that well. I think in Pep saying, you know, if he's unhappy at the football club, you sort of wonder, like, for Bernardo Silva, considering he played probably 80, 90% of the games or started that many games, like, why would you be unhappy when you're playing week in, week out and you're playing that well? So there must be something else there. So if the link is there and Bernardo's not willing to sort of squash it himself and say he wants to be at City next season, then, you know, that's him. That's him playing his cards based on the season that he's had. And for Pep, I think it's fair to say you don't want any players there who are unhappy because, you know, like, it might upset the whole team. And I think when you see with the sort of success that some sides have, you know, it's not because one or two players are good and feeling themselves. It's because of the collective all working hard together and really believing in each other, I feel. You know, you can have disagreements and stuff, but if there's any sort of cancer within the team, you know, that can spread so quickly and ruin any sort of momentum that you have. So I think for this situation with Bernardo, it would be sad to see him leave, especially after the season that he's just had. And you're thinking, you know, he's not like he's 33, 34 years of age. It's a guy who can continue to get better, continue to have a huge impact. So it would be a shame. But at the end of the day, this seems to be the way that City are. And if somebody wants to leave, as we saw with Ferran Torres earlier in the season, then I guess if the price is right, they'll let them leave. And it's so ruthless and cutthroat, but I guess that's what they believe in. And they believe that they're going to try and keep the camp happy. And if the camp's not happy or any individual within it, then they will look at those options. So, as I say, you look at the stats there, and he's done spectacularly well. He's played a lot of games over the last 5 seasons. And it's because he's such a special talent. And it would be sad to see, I would be sad to see him leave. But this is the way football is. And for some people, you know, the final destination is not always the place where the supporters think it should be. For him, maybe he's going to Barcelona, maybe he's going somewhere else. And I'll be interested to see how this pans out over the remaining few weeks of pre-season.
Nadim just said, this is who City are.
Another player that wants to go to Barcelona, that Barcelona want. What are they doing? What are they selling now? Teapots, cutlery. What are they,
tag tail.
Sell the tea lady. What are they selling? Everything. What are they selling? Bricks, tiles off the roof.
But going back to City, is there a risk of them losing the identity that we've come to know? Loads of attacking players, a false nine, if players like all
no,
these three
you know,
go.
You know why? Both Liverpool and City, you know what their identity is? And I don't know if the boys agree. I imagine so. They're managers. They're an identity of their manager. Both clubs. The way they play, the way they conduct themselves, slightly different, but both successful. These clubs at the moment are an identity, and they're, you know, both have their history in different ways. People turn their nose up at Man City. Man City have been a big club for a long time. They've just yo-yoed for many years, from success to second and third tier football, blah blah blah. But City just haven't appeared on the scene, the old main road and blah blah blah. However, their recent identity from both these clubs is just harnessed by the two guys that are in charge. The bigger worry here is when those two decide to hot foot to Spain and Germany or whatever it is, that's the bigger identity problem. Not the odd player, as good as they are, and all these players have been very good, particularly Bernardo Silva, but the identity of these clubs falls away with the manager, not
particularly
the players.
Particularly City. Particularly City. It's not a new thing they've had money. They've always had tons of money, but they never played this kind of football through all the other managers that they brought in before Pep, and they still had the money to bring players in. So I'm with Craig, 100%. The two sides, no question, are about their managers.
I mean, they had success, Pellegrini, and particularly City, Pellegrini, Mancini, obviously that famous finish at the Etihad and blah, 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 and they were successful teams. But as Stevie said, they did not entertain in the manner in which this current City team does.
So we've been talking about Sadio Mane all week, Nadim, understandably so. And just because we have got you on, I'm interested, with your Man City roots, how you view this whole situation. Them letting Mane go, bringing Darwin Nunez in, is it one where you think, maybe this could work in our favour? Is it one that fills you with fear? What do you think about it?
Hey, listen, I'm neutral. I don't know what you're talking about, our favour. I literally don't know what you're talking about.
I said roots.
You need to do better than that. okay, yeah. I think the difference with this sort of signing for me is I see Mane as being probably one of the best players in the Premier League for the past few seasons. I think he's an incredible player. The type of player who, as a defender, you just don't want to play against. You know, he has big impact. Like last season, he was down on his assist and so on. But when he's in the side, you know, you're thinking about, it used to be Salah, Firmino, Mane. Like, they're the front three you don't want to play against. So for him to be leaving at a point where, you know, that's the most games he's played for Liverpool in any season, so he's an integral part of that. And in the second half of the season, when Salah wasn't necessarily scoring as many goals as he would have liked to, you know, Mane was stepping up. That's the sort of foil that the way he can sort of play going forward for Liverpool. So for him to leave, that's a big blow. That's one of the sort of pillars of the front three as such. And in Nunez coming in, that's an exciting prospect. So I think from that standpoint, you know, I trust Liverpool with their signings, but especially based on how we've seen Diaz and other players come in and do very, very well. But it doesn't feel like he'll be the type of player or have the same impact that Mane had last season. I don't expect him to have that next season. So maybe there's going to be some element of a drop-off potentially with that, and there's going to be a sort of change in, you know, like as Stevie was saying, you know, Liverpool and Craig was saying, Liverpool and City, they have their managers, they have their style of play. But sometimes with the people within the team, they do things slightly differently. Like Jota doesn't run in behind as much as, say, Mane does and things like that. So it'll be interesting to see how he fits in, you know, for such a young player playing in a new league and the like. I expect him to do well because Liverpool are Liverpool. You know, playing in that stadium is incredible. The mentality in there is to be just winners. So I think he will get better. But I think for Mane, you know, he feels like he was a finished product. So maybe they have dropped off a little bit with that. But whether or not that means that they won't be as successful next season, who knows? Because at the end of the day, you know, they are pretty much just a machine at this moment in time, and it's still one of the sides to beat.
Do you know, I'm a little surprised, Kay, that today we haven't entered this studio and covering that ESPN FC sign behind us is a large banner saying, "Thank you, Sadio." On Friday, was it Thursday or Friday? He was like, "Hey! Thank you."
So, Nadim, the other day, Stevie, within the boardroom, was like, "Thank you very much, Sade, for your time and your service, but goodbye."
Absolutely.
As if it was Stevie's job to say thanks to Sade.
No, he's just appreciating him.
Well, why wouldn't you? 23
Did somebody
goals,
tell him it wasn't his job?
I think the thank you cards in the post.
I thought there were going to be a banner over there today.
You know, and Nathan's talking about it there, but it's actually what we were talking about before, about the managers. So when Pep loses Aguero, he has to adjust the way he plays the game because he doesn't have a centre-forward that he actually thinks is the best. And guess what Pep's going to do next year when he's got Haaland as his number nine? He's going to adjust the way they play as well. They're not going to play exactly the same way. They will adjust, as will Liverpool. And that'll be through the manager. But it'll still be entertaining, but it'll just be adjusted. So, yes, Firmino, Salah, Mane, great front three. Nobody wants to play against it. But you know what? You have to move on. And you very, very, very rarely can move on and get the same player, the same type of player, get the same goals, the same assists. You have to move on and you have to adapt to what you have. And right now, both sides, going forward, I've got some fantastic football players.
We're not moving on from the predictions, though. Just because Nadim's not been around for a few shows, he's not getting away with revisiting his Premier League predictions for last season. Great little picture there, Nadim. All right, champion Man City, runner-up Manchester United.
No, listen, it's just because I live in Manchester. I got that wrong. Don't even worry about that. Do not even worry about that. And, all yeah. Right.
So can you explain top scorer Romelu Lukaku?
What do you mean you got that wrong? You got the rest of it wrong.
I was drinking the Kool-Aid start of the season. But at the end of the day, come on, it's predictions. If we knew what was actually going to happen, we'd be playing the lottery as well every single week and making as much money as humanly possible. So I got it wrong, apart from Man City. So give me credit
very
for that.
Very wrong. They're among the worst predictions, Nadim, that we've seen across the panel.
Well,
he got the winner of the league,
right?
Which is... Some people did not.
Player of the year, Jadon Sancho.
Player of the year. I said player of the year was going to be Ruben Dias. And you know what? He was, in my mind. So I don't care who votes. And by the way,
who got City wrong?
What?
Who did get
Somebody
City
Somebody went for Chelsea. I don't know. Most of us had Man United in the top four. I had Man United in the top
Jules.
Four.
Yeah. Jules had Chelsea, people, right?
It was Jules, huh?
People are not here to defend themselves. Yeah, it was Jules. but most of us had Man United. Can I spin this to Man United, by the way? Because almost everybody had them in the top four. I don't think anybody had them out of the top four.
No.
And that tells you how big a shambles that became. So these surprises come up. I mean, Jadon Sancho he's got a big season next year with a new manager. And a lot of us thought Lukaku would continue his, myself included, would continue his form from Inter and bring it into the Premier League. But clearly, in his head, he didn't particularly want to be there. So I would like to see the man or woman that got the predictions 100% correct. Did you do predictions?
I did not.
Why?
I don't know. I wasn't asked to.
Well, Dan Thomas was.
Yeah, I know.
Was he?
I think so. It sounds like you're sticking up for Nadim there.
No,
listen,
it's solidarity to around a lot of us who all got it wrong. We picked the winner. Don't forget the producers of this show come to us before the transfer window closes. So it's a blind prediction, really, because people could go out with a week to go and splurge and make us all look stupid. See?
Sounds like
important thing in this game, you've always got to be able to cover yourself. Cover all your bases. And as Gab said last night, and his predictions were particularly bad, that he was not happy with the player of the year. He started shouting. That was before he let it known to the world that he hates Dennis Bergkamp.
Hates Dennis Bergkamp, I know. Yes. Very, very weird.
He got very angry.
And then he tried to backtrack and was like, no, I really like him. But he told us all that he didn't like him. Anyway, that's
I got asked. I know we've got to go. I got asked an extra time. There's the signal.
There's the signal. And Craig, Stevie and Nathan will be answering your questions on tonight's Extra Time. You can make sure to stay up to date with it all by subscribing to our YouTube page. Reading an email was one thing, but I never thought I would see the day that Craig Burley would be featuring on Football Americas.
Yeah, they want me to talk about Christian Pulisic tonight and some crying Americans about possibly not getting some game time. I'm a bit worried because Seb messaged me about four times, which everybody here knows that I hate. And then he got, said, I'll get the producer to send you a text sheet. At which point I said, just call me on FaceTime. Enough.
When can I see it? When can I listen to this?
You can catch it tonight.
Oh, you're beautiful. Yeah.
Right. Craig Burley on Football America's. Never thought I'd see the day. Cannot wait. Make sure you catch
and
it.
By the way, I'm not getting paid.
On
ESPN. I'm doing it out of the goodness of my heart.
Did you know less than 10% of Americans own an e-bike? Here's why that should change. Studies show e-bike owners actually end up exercising more, plus getting outside more. If you're looking for a balanced lifestyle and everyday adventures, you need to check out Lectric e-bikes. They are the number one selling e-bike brand in America. Their bikes are typically foldable, pre-assembled, and have serious range up to 150 miles on some models. Check them out today at lectricebikes.com and add some more adventure to your week. That's lectricebikes.com. Okay, Vincent Kompany coming in as Burnley manager as we take a look at his career accomplishments. We know what he achieved as a player. He comes into the role after managing Anderlecht in the Belgian division. And now it is Burnley, and that's quite the task ahead as well. Nadim, I want to talk to you about what he will bring to Burnley as a manager and the expectations for him.
Yeah, well, in regards to this, I firstly think it's a good move for him and it's a good move for Burnley. And obviously I'm coming from a place of bias because he's a friend of mine. So, you know, let me try and explain this further. I think the Burnley situation with the money that they owe, you know, that sort of instability that's there now, it's not a great time to go there. But the character that Vincent Kompany is somebody for all the success that he had. It's not purely through just tippy-tappy football, trying to have, you know, 100 passes before you score a goal. Like, when I played alongside him, he literally is relentless. Like, he's tough. He's aggressive with his style of play. Rosette is fine. You know, he just wants to play winning football and try and do it the sort of right way alongside his teammates, making sure everybody's working together and pushing hard. And when you hear those sort of attributes, we think, well, Burnley without a manager, but have that sort of identity anyway. So I think it's a great fit. And to add to it, I think he's young enough to still have played against some of those players that are still at the club under contract. But then also, a lot of those players would have seen him play. And he's somebody, I believe, that a lot of those people would have loved to have played with because they know about his leadership qualities, they know about his understanding of his game, his desire, and as well, like when he was at City, I think a lot of people forget, in those last two, three seasons, he spent a lot of time injured and his back was very much against the wall, but he would find a way to get through that. So he's been through adversity. So I think he understands what it is to go and play against Burnley. He's not coming in blind thinking that Burnley's going to be a place where he'll go and turn them into this most fantastic football team. But he lives for that challenge, and I imagine he's very much looking forward to going in there. And as well, some people say, oh, it's the 46 games, it's the Championship. Like, I know Vinny, he was watching the Championship when he was in England, and he understands that the sort of quality of football that he's going to see there is going to be different to, say, the sort of pure concepts that maybe they were trying to do in the Belgian League. But I think he loves that. Vinny loves a fight. He loves a challenge. He loves being able to try and motivate a bunch of players around him. And as a consequence, he'll go in there, not obviously without the experience, but I think he'll be excited by the sort of difficulties of trying to get a team ready for Saturday, Tuesday, and as well, know how to manage them. Because as a player, you know, there were times where he's getting through 50, 60 games in a season anyway. So I personally, like I say, I am biased, but I think it's a great opportunity for him to get himself back in the Northwest, which is where his wife's from, where his kids were born as well. You know, so it is a semi-familiar place. So good luck to him, and you know, hopefully things work out for him and things work out for Burnley, because it's going to be a tough job. Because we're talking about managers with identities, like Burnley was associated with Sean Dyche for a long time, but now it's the Vincent Kompany era, and hopefully this can be a significant one where in the future, should he leave, you know, be spoken about in the same sort of manager as the previous guy.
Just to add there, it sounds, Nadim, that you're not surprised at all to see him as a coach.
No, not at all. Like, I think the guys will probably say there are certain people who you play with, you know, who are just playing the game. And there are other people who are basically kind of like living it and almost like a coaching from a player's standpoint anyway. Like, I always found some of our best captains, you know, some of the things they'd be saying and the way that they're doing things is not just about themselves. It's about everybody else as well. So then when you think about a managerial role as I see it, you know, you can't just look after yourself or look after one or two players. You have to find a way to sort of cater to everybody to try and find the best to get the best out of everybody. Like, even for him, he speaks so many languages. I remember he was the first who I saw in a dressing room go and speak to everybody, whether it was French, it was Spanish, it was German, you know, it was English. Like, he was making sure that there was a sort of sense of unity within that space. And I think going down to the Championship, that is something that's key. Like, we see managers like Neil Warnock, as you'll know, Kay, you know, traditionally tended to be quite successful. But it's not necessarily because he's the best coach in the world, but he's good at motivating those players. And when the difference in talent between club to club is so small, sometimes just that sense of motivation of people wanting to run through a brick wall for their coach and for their teammates can get you higher up in the league. Like, look at the Luton, for example, making the playoffs. You know, you wouldn't look at their team and say that's one of the best, that's one of the top six teams in the Championship, but they found something, they played good football, and they worked very hard for each other. So I think for Vinny, you know, when I played with him, that's exactly who he was. People who played with him knew that, you know, he was there for you, and you felt like you had to be there for him because he set the tone from early doors. And to tell a story, like, we were playing against, I think it was Inter Milan in a pre-season game in the USA, and he's went Inter just won the Champions League, I believe, and it was in a game, City were getting battered, basically. And this is when they were sort of on the rise, but Inter were Inter, you know, they were the kings of Europe. And Vinny was kicking, I think it was Samueletto, kicking him in the first half because we were two down, three down, getting humiliated, basically. So at halftime, the Touré brothers came up to Vinny. You know, this is Samueletto, this is one of the kings of Africa. And they're saying to him, come on, just relax, he's upset, you know, don't do this to him. And Vinny's response was, I don't care. Every time he complains, I'll kick him again. And he proceeded to do just that for the whole of the second half. So when you're on the field with that and people say, oh, you know, just go softly, softly, that doesn't exist for him. And when you see him acting like this, you can't help but go and follow and support him, because even though the team, things aren't going well from a football standpoint, you'll never see him lose fights. So that's who he is. And yeah, it's no surprise that he's a manager.
It's a big name appointment, but I worry about the ownership of this football club now and who they're going to try and offload to get the wages off, and, you know, contracts are contracts. I'm not judging this appointment or Vincent Kompany. I'm merely talking about the Championship. Nathan mentioned Luton. Nathan Jones was a young up-and-coming manager who took Luton up but knew the lower leagues and the Championship well. Nottingham Forest went up. Guess what? Stevie Cooper knew the Championship really well and those kind of players. It's a bun fight. The last time Burnley went down, they went down with Sean Dyche and came straight back up because he had an immense knowledge of that division with his previous successful tenure at Watford. There has been arguments to that. Marco Silva at Fulham didn't really know the Championship, but then you could say, well, Fulham were streets ahead of the rest.
Aita Karanka with Middlesbrough?
Yeah, I'm saying there are arguments to it. I mean, Burnley, in some essence, should be ahead of the rest with players that have been playing in the Premier League. Should be. But you just don't know. There's clubs that have just gone down and have hired big names, and yeah, I get all that about respecting managers, but what's the saying? You can take a horse to water, but you can't make it drink. And once these guys got on the field, if they don't want to fight in this division because it's not the Premier League, on a Saturday and a Tuesday or a Wednesday, and a Saturday and a Tuesday or Wednesday, every week, then you're stuffed. You're stuffed.
I'm with Craig. I don't doubt Vincent Kompany. He was a great guy to play with and be a captain. And I don't doubt that he will motivate any team that he's in charge of. But I agree 100% that you need to know the league and you need to know the types of players that you need to get out of that league. And I don't see how Vincent Kompany does. And the reason I'm telling you this is because when I was managing in the Championship with Notts County and we were getting relegated, I believed that I was going to be in charge the following year. I didn't get the job, but I stayed at the club. And the guy who came in brought in four or five players, and when I saw them to begin with, I thought, what are you doing here? But I'll tell you what, we were top of the league by Christmas because he knew the league and he knew the type of players that were needed in order to get out of there or to compete and challenge. On top of that problem that Vincent has, he's at a club that won't have any money to spend. They are nearly 100 million in debt. So they ain't going to be giving him money to go out and buy certain players. So everything's against him. Apart from obviously the character of Vincent Kompany.
I want to call on your experience again, actually, with what we're about to show you now, a new transfer coming in to Liverpool, Calvin Ramsey from Aberdeen, from one right-back to another right-back, 18 years old, by the way, £4.5 million plus add-ons. How big of a jump is this?
On paper, it's huge, but it depends on what's between the young man's ears. Because you know for a fact he's going into a great group of players that will look after him. Happened to me, I was 19, he's 18. I went into a group of players who were superstars on paper, but were great people, great teammates. They looked after you on and off the field. And so if he can adjust to that, understand that it's going to take him some time to get a game, then he'll be fine. Because he's going into a fantastic group that will look after him. And that means that all he has to do is train hard and hopefully he progresses with the talent he already has.
This has to be Liverpool and hopefully the young man looking at the next two or three years and saying, from a club perspective and from a player's perspective, where can I be? When you walk in, when you're a player and you see other players coming in, you don't need to see them in a game before you know what they're like. You only need to see them in training. And he's going to go to training and see a marked difference from Aberdeen to Liverpool. And he's going to learn fast about the levels he's going to have to get to on a daily basis. So it has to be Liverpool clearly looking to the future. But it'll be a long future because unless Alexander-Arnold has an injury or a severe loss of form, he's one of the apples of the eye of Jurgen Klopp. Now, I know he's got some deficiencies defensively, but he's a brilliant player. And so it's not easy for any youngster. I mean, I don't remember, who was fullback when you came in as a youngster? I mean,
Phil Neal, Alan Kennedy were the fullback.
But they were about to retire, were they not?
Not quite, supposedly. I was definitely signed in the same sort of position as Calvin is. It was for the future. I never made my debut. 9 months? It took me 9 months.
But I couldn't find you for 9 months when you came in.
I was in the snooker hall most often. But it was only because I had the right people around me encouraging me and telling me the same things. And I was patient. And he's going to have to be patient. Because it's going to take
him. Laugh. He's not changed.
More than 9 months.
Still patient.
To get in that side.
You're going to see a lot more transfer talk over on our website. Stay up to date with all the latest moves when it comes to the transfer window.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/FC. Just go to Indeed.com/FC right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on the podcast. Indeed.com/FC, terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
There's an article from Jules on our website also about Mauricio Pochettino on his way out at PSG after 18 months. Not turning out maybe as he would have hoped it would at PSG.
Have they not sacked him yet? I mean, just hurry up and sack him for God's sake.
Now, the talk is that he would like a job back in the Premier League. Mauricio Pochettino.
Well, can I have a job in the Premier League? Yeah, we all will.
Had his mind set on the Manchester United job. Obviously, they've got Ten Hag. We know that that's not going. We know that top six side's pretty stable with what they've got going on.
Well, if he waits long enough, he'll make it his job at Tottenham back.
OK. We're going to go there.
Oh, is you? I didn't know. I didn't read that far down the email.
You did it. I know. I thought you'd read the email today.
About half. It's too long.
My question is, though, has his stock dropped? And if so, how much?
Yes. Yeah, I think so. I think primarily because what he was doing at Tottenham, I think in a sense, was overachieving. And in some sense, although he has won Ligue 1,
there is a sense of underachievement at PSG and not being able to handle a very difficult dressing room, it seems, and maybe even a sporting director, technical director, call it what you want, and bridge that gap. So I would say, yeah, I'm much happier. If I was a United fan, I think I'm happier with Ten Hag at that club than I am with Pochettino.
Why?
Just my opinion.
Why?
Well, I think his stock has dropped, and I think Ten Hag has a very good CV. So that's only my opinion.
You'd have to look as well at PSG. He couldn't sort the dressing room out. So basically, right now, Manchester United, the dressing room is as big a problem as any. So if you're bringing in somebody who very recently couldn't handle a dressing room with egos...
How many managers, top managers right now, could handle that PSG dressing room from everything that we hear, do you think?
Well, does that not go in his favour
that you could say, oh, well, it was at PSG where we know this has been well documented?
That's not the point, Kay. The point is that he's shown that with superstar names and big egos, he couldn't handle them. And if you look at Manchester United, you look in the dressing room, they've got superstar names with big egos. So anybody who looks at that and says, this guy's perfect for our club, that needs the brains tested.
Nadine, what do you think of it all? And I'm interested to know is where you think his future might lie, because we see in the article from Jules that he mentions the likes of Newcastle and Leicester that, yes, it's a level down, but there are ambitions at those clubs. Or could it be that it could be back to Spurs in the end?
Yeah, I think that is interesting. And I think the Newcastle element, it's just a nice little subplot for the Premier League as such, because for them, they will be very, very ambitious. You know, the investment that's going to come in, they're not planning on, say, finishing mid-table, hoping to finish top 10, that sort of thing. So with Pochettino, if it was true as well that it was linked with the United job, even though his stock may have dropped, people still perceiving him to be like a good bet to rebuild a big football club, a good bet to sort of find success for teams who were just on the verge of it. And arguably, you could say that's what Spurs were when he was in charge. So his stock theoretically may have dropped emotionally, but he's still finding himself in the same sort of banding, barring the Man United thing, in the Premier League. So I think it's an interesting one, because you know the style of play that you get with him. I think for Spurs, their fans remember those years really fondly. You remember them going to a Champions League final, like, and in some ways, you know, they were unlucky in the final because they played particularly well. But yeah, I think he'll be fine. I think he'll find these good jobs, because this PSG element, he can always say, like, this was, we can talk about dressing rooms and egos and so on, but I don't think I've seen many dressing rooms like that PSG one. Like, people are hoping that's one that you'll never see again for all the talent that they have. Like, how do you manage that? How do you have those three players? You've got, like, the highest paid player in the history of football next to the second highest paid player in the history of football. And one's running, one's not running, you know, all this type of stuff. The chemistry's wrong. Team split. Some people attack, some people defend. You know, if everything was going well, then great. But that was a tough spot, I think, anyway, in my opinion, to be able to manage when things weren't going as well as, say, that you would like. So I think his stock, you know, it may be down in France, but in terms of England, let's say we spoke for ages about him being linked with Man United, one of the biggest football clubs in the world, and him potentially having the reins to that project. So I think overall, it will be a stain on his record, especially not winning the Liga title a year ago. But I think he'll be just fine, and I think he's not in a position where he has to completely rebuild his image, because he's still being linked with jobs for teams who are aspiring to be in the Champions League, teams who are aspiring to win trophies in a season. So, yeah, I don't really see much issue with him going forward.
Speaking of Manchester United, Mark Ogden is the latest guest on the Gab and Jules podcast. Make sure to check out Jules' article and make sure to download that podcast to hear what those guys were talking about. Passion, drive and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights and more. Whether you're into speed, power or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPNpods. That's amazon.com/ESPNpods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Well, that will do it for the latest edition of ESPN FC, but you'll be happy to hear that these guys and Naden will be back to answer your tweets. Stick around for extra time.
Not sure I'll be happy.
Oh, welcome into the latest edition of Extra Time. No Dennis Berg campaign.
Right, can I finish
today.
That story? Because I was just about to ask Stevie before we rushed to some graphic or other, whatever it was. Question last night. Bench one, start one, bench one, sell one. Bergkamp, yeah. Van Persie, Van Nistelrooy. Start one, bench one, sell one.
Oof. First question is from Craig Burley tonight.
I'd probably bench.
I don't think
I'd
it would
probably
difficult.
Bench Van Nistelrooy.
That's
I'd start Bergkamp and I'd sell Van Persie because you get more money for him.
No, that was who we went with. Anyway, Gab got very angry. Gab also went that way, but then proceeded to tell us that he disliked Dennis Bergkamp. I said, the best players.
What was his reason?
I don't know. We never got to the bottom of it, and then he got very up.
I just say he wasn't my type of person, it sounded like. He wasn't my type of guy.
It seems to me that there's been some sort of interview request denial.
Yes. I didn't like the way he carried himself on the pitch. I didn't like this. And then when they pushed him on it, it's like he backtracked and was saying, there's nothing against him. He was always nice whenever I met him.
Just saying. We're just getting out of there. Gab doesn't like Dennis.
Something there, right.
Hiding something.
What about Nadim Anour is with us. Do you like Dennis Bergkamp or are you a Bergkamp hater too?
No, I'm not a hater. I'd have picked that. I would have done that question in that exact same order as well. So I don't know why that would be, but Bergkamp was special. And just, I can't help but think about that goal he scored against Newcastle at St. James's Park. It's one of the best touches I've seen against Abizaz, and what a finish as well.
We thought it was a Dutch thing at one point because one of our producers has some Dutch in him and is particularly annoying. He's not on tonight. He's not here. He won't see this. Right? But then I was reminded that all three players were Dutch, so it wasn't that. So it just was Dennis Bergkamp.
What was it about the Van Nistelrooy, Van Persie that made you forget about the others?
No, I don't know. I was just thinking about... No, I won't.
Right. Stevie went
I wondered if that was the angle he was coming from, that this particular producer had got his back up.
Right.
As he can do.
I mean, we're not going to let it go now, are we? Whenever Gab's on, it will be coming off. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Stevie's been to the dentist today just to know, and he's okay.
What was he doing today?
Got a crown. Torture. Oh, I hate it.
What was torture was the bill after he got the crown.
He's got insurance.
Even with the insurance.
Even with insurance.
Right.
637.
Huh? Did the dentist have big windows? Saw you coming in the car park. We've got one here, and he comes.
You know what? I didn't even get toothpaste and a toothbrush on the way out today.
Shocking. Hey. Come to my dentist, they give you that. All right. Nadim, how is the book doing? And when will we get the Nadim entry?
Nadim entry, I'm not sure about that. But I think the book's doing well. You know, people are kind of coming up to me on the street saying they've read it and stuff. And that's a really weird feeling because it's like, well, that means you really, really know me. So I think it's doing well everywhere I go for some of the media stuff I'm doing, whether it's supporters, clubs or just other events. There are quite a few selling there, and it's also it's quite a nice feeling to walk into a bookstore and see like you're there in the store. So it's going well. I'm happy. I'm enjoying it. I'm enjoying having myself being published.
Dan mentioned that documentary yesterday. Don't mention
it. Which documentary?
The documentary that involves a current player.
Stevie knows the name of it.
And he seemed quite chirpy about it, Dan.
What did you call it the other day? What's Pogba's documentary called?
Pogumentary, isn't it?
No. What would yours be called if you had one?
I don't know.
All right.
I don't know.
Nickelmentary?
They quite have the same ring about it, does it?
As what, Pogumentary? All right.
Well, anyway, Dan was quite chirpy about it, as if it was something we were going to talk about.
But you refused.
Quietly shut down.
What, Pogu?
Yeah, this would be quite interesting, not one.
Pogba's
you going to watch it?
Am I not?
Exactly. There we go.
Well, no maybe chance. In one of the emails that you read, you might be expected to watch it so we can talk about it on the show.
We could tell you, right, without even seeing it, I could tell you exactly what's on it.
How long have you been here?
Some big daft haircut with a big smiley face.
There's something that said, you must watch this on the email, that it gets watched.
Yeah.
That's not how it works around here.
All right. Craig, among the promoted sides, who do you think has the most chance to survive relegation this coming season?
Not Nottingham Forest. Unfortunately for them. Fulham obviously won the league. I'm going to say Bournemouth. It's close. I mean, Fulham have lost Carvalho. He's another one that's gone to, I think he's gone to Liverpool, isn't he?
Yeah.
The youngster, right. Playmaker. Mitrovic has been brilliant, but we know it's just a struggle to get the same chances in the Premier League to get those numbers. Bournemouth have the same issues. Two good managers, Scotty Parker and Marco Silva. I'm going to say Bournemouth.
All right.
Yeah, just.
I've been asked this question before, but here it is again. Kay, start, bench and drop Ravanelli, Viduka and Hasselbank. I think you were on with me when I was asked this one. I'm going to say the same again. I'm going to start Mark Viduka. I'm going to bench Hasselbank, although I'd rather them be on the pitch together.
I'm going
to drop Ravanelli.
You Italian hater.
I hate those Italians.
Why would you have Viduka over Hasselbank?
When in terms of scoring goals at the Riverside, he's up at the top. And he was... It's really hard to pull them apart, and you'd actually want them both on together, but just ahead of him.
Because Viduka, listen, he played with him.
Hi, he's a big unit. Pretty good.
But it was... Hey, chaps, can you get me the ball?
he did great in getting Middlesbrough to Europe and having a great European run when they did get there. It was a good strong side. I changed a little bit since then.
Yeah. Mark was a great talent. He really was.
Are you starting him?
I'm not getting involved in this.
All right.
Did mine yesterday. Hey. I did the Dutch segment. All right. I don't hate anybody.
Yeah, I remember. And the link. What, you don't hate Peter and you don't hate golf.
Peter.
And you don't hate the producer.
Oh, Peter.
Peter.
Peter. I don't even know his name.
Listen, I don't.
I said pizza.
Pizza.
Pizza. I thought you said Peter.
Peter Pizza. Producer or Peter? A pizza. What are you talking about?
All right.
I don't hate the producer.
Anyway, in case you're wondering about
sometimes
the link, they're all
get
Boris.
Slightly
right
annoying. I mean, like...
When he's chewing gum in your ear.
Plenty of time he asked me. He already had the answer. It was his answer. He said to me, hey, Craig, whose was the worst elbow or incident? Was it Vincent Kompany or was it Ashley Cole? And I went, that was Vincent Kompany. And he went, nah, it was Ashley Cole. Why ask me? Why ask?
I love that this has gone to Peter when I actually said Peter. Right. Hi, everyone. I'll ask you first, Nadim. First car you owned?
It was a VW Polo. Delightful little car. Except people used to take the mick out of it, say it was like a little Mario Kart. So this is when I was playing in the Premier League. They had all these fancy cars, Ferraris and all that stuff. And there I was turning up saying, people said I'm too big for it. But, you know, it's character building.
I love it. First car you owned?
Ford Capri.
What colour?
Oh, yeah, Ford Capri. Hey,
John.
What a flash. And the flashy boy if he come up with a Ford Capri.
Registration.
What? I know that'll mean nothing to you. Pre-registration.
What a big time, Charlie.
What age were you? Talking about
what age were you?
18 or 19.
Ah, big time, Charlie, with a capri.
Absolute massive.
Hey, all fancy motor going down the road.
You know how much that cost?
I know, it was cheap. If you had a capri then, right, you were a flash, Harry.
I could afford it on my first professional contract at Chelsea, and that was not a lot. Trust me, it wasn't.
It was probably more than most kids your age were earning, and better than most kids your age were driving.
But that's not my fault, is it?
Could have been humble like Nadim.
Listen to him. Yeah. Listen to the man of the people.
What are you talking about? What do you mean?
Citizen Smith over here.
When was a dad?
I'll buy the same as everybody else, just in case people think I'm a snob.
No, not at all. I thought I could afford. And I got duped. I think I've answered this before.
You dipped at the dentist today.
It was Hanson that sold me it. His wife's car. It was a Datsun Sonny, a red Datsun Sonny. And it had four remolds on it. And we had to drive, I can't remember the name of the port, but it was like a 5-hour drive from Liverpool. We were going on a cruise with the above said Hanson and his wife. And halfway there, all the tyres exploded. And we had to pull off and find a garage. It had spokes and spikes and all kinds of bits of metal hanging out the front left tyre. So I thought, I'll pull over and put the spare on. Spare was flat.
Was he having you on?
Honestly. 1,100 quid it cost.
Did he get your money back?
Oh, why, that'll be right. I said, so I had to get four new tyres and we had to get a brand new spare as well, because when they blew it up, it was knackered. So I got on the boat and I said to him, oh, by the way, thanks for the dodge you sold me. And he went, what did you expect for 1,100 quid? That was his answer.
Should have just got a Ford Capri.
Honestly. Yeah. He had a black mask and a black and white jersey on it.
Do you remember how big the front was in those Capris?
Yeah.
Couldn't see over the bottom.
Was it a two-seater?
No, it had two seats in the back, but they were not really seats.
Right, so it was a two-seater.
It was a flashy car. Big time, Charlie. Yeah.
But at least
through London, giving it all that with a hill boy.
I'd rather be the big time Charlie and have some tyres in the car than be driving about being the man of the people, having a dud.
Yeah, all right. Since both Don and Shaka are not on the show, share your candid views on the following. In a winner-takes-all match, which of the two can you bet your house on to give you an accurate result? Shaka's algorithms or Don's percentage chance?
Not just Shaka's algorithms. We're talking about a man who recently was at the Gillette Stadium to watch the New England Revolution against another Major League Soccer team, and came in here and told us of his experience and told us what the result was. I said, oh, that was nice. And then we run the highlight in, and that wasn't the result. So I'm sorry, but if he can't even go to the game and know the result, I've got no confidence in either of these two, I have to be honest.
You've got to pick one.
Well, because Don would go and ask his Twitter friends. I got to pick one.
Don's percentage chance, it sounds like, then. Well, you think that's more accurate?
Let's be honest, right? If the question is about an accurate result,
right?
How can you go with Shaka when he was there, saw the result, and still got it wrong? So Don, even if he tried, would have to win over that.
Nadim, any love for Shaka here?
No, I'm leaning Don, to be honest. I think with Shaka as well. It depends what time of day you ask him. You know, if he's more positive in the morning, he'll give you sort of different sort of algorithm. If it gets a bit funny in the afternoon, it's a different algorithm again. So, yeah, I think I'm going to have to go with Don, because as well with Shaka, if he gets tired, then who knows what he's going to say.
Don's just started saying 50-50 to get away with this.
Yeah, well, he's picked it up now. I mean, he's cottoned on now, Don. You know, it's taken a while. But, you know, he's getting there. So I think we'll go with Don.
All right. Nadim, favourite stadium?
That's a worry for Shaka, isn't it?
I know.
That's a worry.
I like Shaka's algorithm.
Oh, good. That's also a worry.
Nadim, favourite stadium to play at when you played in MLS?
I actually quite enjoyed playing in Portland. Like, I think if you are to watch a game and you've travelled over from Europe. I think that's the one that's closest to sort of like more of a European type experience. It's just that bit older, you know, the crowd get into it in a certain sort of manner. And yeah, I would say that the only downside obviously is the fact you're playing on AstroTurf, which isn't something that you're used to if you tend to play in sort of one of the main leagues in Europe. But I really enjoyed playing in Portland. It was always a good occasion, good noise from the fans. And yeah, I'd have to say that.
All right, for all of you, during your career, what was the longest break you would take before touching a football again during your summer break? Would players typically avoid touching a football for several weeks or even months?
Well, when you don't have any kids, you wouldn't get near a ball.
Never.
No. From the minute from the last time you leave the training ground or the last exhibition match to the minute you go back for the first day of pre-season, you might not even see a ball because you're running. Whatever gap that was.
Where are you going to kick a ball?
On the beach.
Why would you do that?
You just lunge around.
On the beach?
Why would you do that? Do that when there's a bar? Now.
So that's it. Switch off completely.
Unless you've got kids. No, you wouldn't be anywhere where you would kick a ball. Beach. You ever been to the beach in Liverpool?
Well, it's your summer holiday. You're going to go on a break. You're going to go on vacation.
Yeah, not going to find a five-a-side game. Avoiding that, like the
no chance.
League.
We're the same, Nadim.
Kinda. I think the culture within the USA is for people to like come into the training ground and play games together and stuff like that. But for me, I think throughout my life, I must have bought 2 footballs. That's it. So when the season was done, like I didn't have a ball. I think it took like basically the pandemic in 2020 for me to actually purchase a ball and be kicking it away from a training ground. So yeah, it's, you know, there's some people who live for football and other people who just go and do it for work. And I think at times I was kind of just doing it for work.
So if you went to California, right, for a holiday, would you go to the nearest radio station or television station and ask to be there and talk on the thingy?
You might not, but we do know people that would. That's all I'm saying. I'm leaving that out there.
We know
people that would do that.
All right.
Hey! I'm on holiday, but I can do something.
It won't be me.
You would you? You wouldn't.
No. I know, but it's just something that you do, though. People often play in their spare time a little game of football.
Yeah, people that don't play football.
Right, but not professionals. So weeks, we're talking weeks, sometimes months. Even months, right?
2 months. Okay.
Nice question.
Free if you can get away with it.
Right. There you go. There's that one answered. Thanks so much for sending
nice questions.
Nice questions. Right. Well, nobody was too upset with them tonight.
I don't get upset with them anymore.
All right.
I've lost the...
We can add that to the list now. He likes extra time questions as well as pizza, golf and red wine.
Yep.
See you tomorrow. Same time, same place.
The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart?
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
What a throw by Mahomes!
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.